We'll call the Hamburg City Council meeting to order for May 23rd at 7 o'clock. I'll rise here for the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'll have to spend some time on public comment. All right, we'll move on to the agenda review. Any items to add?
Mayor and Council, just one item. It's last item on your packet. It's just the work comp renewal with the League of Minnesota Cities. Basically, just to look at there if we want to look at a regular premium option or the deductible option. And we'll just add that under new city business.
Anybody else have anything else to add or delete? Or take anything off of the consent agenda? If not, I look for a motion to adopt as amended.
So be it.
Sorry. Moved and seconded to adopt the agenda as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Move on to the consent agenda. Look for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
The new moved and seconded to pass the, or yeah, approve the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Move on to old city business. Hopefully everybody had a chance to review some of the updated information in regards to the leasing of the tower to broadband. Jeremy, you want to kind of lead the
Yeah, so basically I just had approached Anthony about $55 a month and then looking at a CPI increase. And basically he says any contracts that basically he does are in 5-year blocks for 20-year period. So he would like to stay with that type of lease agreement. But he said, you know, considering the additional equipment and to cover utilities or inflation or anything, he would justify an increase of a total of $75. He'd be willing to go to $75 a month. So that'd be my recommendation then.
Absolutely.
Then that cover kind of covers everything.
I'll make a motion to go to $75 a month.
Thank you. Moved and seconded to approve the contract with broadband at $75 a month. Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Let him know then that we're good to go there.
Yep, I'll draft that up and get that ready for next meeting.
Okay, move on to new city business here. The seal coat crack sealing project. I think we're ready to go out for bid on that.
Yep, so invitations have been sent out. There was one minor hiccup that we had is basically, I went off the street plan that SEH did for us and just used their quantities for square yards. But obviously, what they had in there for William Street was wrong. So Greg remeasured it, and we'll be resending that out tomorrow with the corrected square yards for William Street. But otherwise, yep, everything will be sent out to the four people on the list, plus included bargain on this also. So I've already talked to Bargain. They stopped in, and they're probably going to team up with one of these contractors and provide a bid also on that. And so we're accepting bids till 4:30 on Monday, June 5th, and then we will bring the, I'll bring that forward at the June 13th meeting.
Anybody have any questions for the staff?
So before, kind of with same with the garbage contracts jumping in here, just unless there's any questions on the seal coating crack sealing. So I think that should be cut and dry, the seal coating and crack sealing, because as you can see, we have the specifications written up, so it should be apples to apples there. With garbage contract, that is up July 31st of this year. We have to provide 60 days notice. if we're not going to re-up with them. If we don't provide 60 days notice, then it renews for one more year. In the past, we've always gone to RFP. I would assume that would be the recommendation here again. It would be my recommendation. It's just a good thing to do every 3 years to keep them honest. So my suggestion would be to just go out for requests for separate proposals. So what we'll do is we'll do have them submit proposals for residential and then a separate proposal for the business and industrial aspects of it. Because what we ran into last year was the residential contract actually came in cheaper with the one company, but their commercial industrial rates, business rates, were way higher. So we actually, and it was what, a 2% difference, if I remember right. It wasn't substantial. So we ended up actually taking the, you know, the higher proposal on the residential end versus the commercial. But so this year we would propose it that they would be separate. So we could possibly award, you know, two separate contracts. So that's something to consider. We don't necessarily have to do that, but that's, I think, how we bid it. See what they come in at and we can go from there.
On the dumpsters on the leaves, is that included with the residential garbage, or is that included with the...
Well, that's what we have, and we do that with them through the solid waste grant. So no matter...
We still pay for that.
Yeah, but we get reimbursed from the county through the grant program, so...
And they don't have no...
It's a, you know...
Whichever way they...
That doesn't matter who does it, so anybody can do that.
Yeah, I just thought maybe we want to keep that.
So. Just something that we want to make sure they provide that service would be the key.
Right.
So with that, before jumping into the next things here, is I'll be on vacation next meeting, but I think I'll be here till Friday so I can have agendas done and run through things with Tamara, and I'll probably meet with you, Chris, if that's okay, and run through things. But like I said, seal coating, lowest bid, unless it's something off the wall differences there that I don't see. I mean, they have to abide by these specs. So I think lowest bid's cut and dry and garbage. There too, I think it's kind of, you know, probably, you know, garbage service is garbage service. So I don't think there should be anything too earth shattering. If absolutely need be, I might be around. Because it's kind of a staycation, so. But worst case scenario, if there's any questions or concerns, we can just hold that second June meeting and then address any issues at that time.
Anybody have any questions about the garbage RFP?
So then basically I would ask for a motion to notify Waste Management that we will not be renewing the contract and that we'll be going to RFPs for residential and business services.
First of all, did we have a, if we stay with Waste Management, was there a, say like a 5 or 6 year thing? Or if we just left it, was your price stay the same? Or
no, the contract becomes...
Now that we go for another contract?
Because the contract's spelled out, I think it's 2.5% increase each year.
Oh, yeah, that's what it says here. Be a 2.5% price increase in years 2 and 3.
Yeah, so they'd probably just continue that with if we went another year. And Waste Management has already contacted me and they'd be willing to, you know, work something out, but, you know, renew the contract, redo it. But I mean, if you're going to look at redoing it, I think RFP is just the best thing that way. You never know if the other company might come in cheaper. Request for proposals. Sorry.
That's okay.
Good question. Any other questions anybody else has? No?
Make a motion to go for request for proposals on the Waste Management for garbage disposal.
And to notify Waste Management that we're not renewing.
Right. Okay. We moved and seconded to move forward with the RFP process for the garbage contracts and notify Waste Management that we will not be continuing the current contract. Any further discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Passes.
Next thing, parking on Brad Street. Just, I've had some residents come talk to me that are concerned that it's basically on Brad Street. And I believe it's mostly from the apartments, the vehicles. Their concern is becoming a parking lot. I've kind of, me and Chris kind of talked about it, Steve. We've looked at it. You know, I really don't know what we could do other than possibly talk to, Vance, is it Vance? I'm going to say Lance. Vance, right? Vance Guanik. Who basically is the manager for the apartments and see that they make sure that they're utilizing the parking lots they have versus constantly using the street. I mean, some of the concerns we've had is that there's people that have three vehicles and they just sit there. You know, they maybe drive one of them or none of them, and the vehicles sit there for an extended period of time. So it's becoming a concern with some of the residents back there. I mean, as far as looking at additional parking, I tried to look at that, but there's nothing. The lot adjacent kind of to the apartments where there's an opening is owned by the bank.
Do they meet the requirements that they have enough stalls per unit?
Well, me and Chris were talking about that, and I was looking for that, and I really didn't find nothing in our zoning ordinance that required or labeled out, you know, the apartments. You know, like, must provide 2 parking spots per unit, or, yeah. Because that's what we were going to go on and use that.
Yeah, one thing when we were going through the ordinances earlier today, in that we found out that the ordinance hadn't been updated since, what, 2005? So, yeah,
2004 or 2005.
So they haven't been touched. So if we haven't had a parking issue on Brad for a while, then it's very well we don't have an ordinance on the books that tell us that, you know, for rental units, you have to have X stalls in that. And so that's something I think that we should probably definitely take a look at if we don't have
it. You know, one of the recommendations I would make is I think we may want to look at starting setting some money aside and maybe looking at going through the ordinances fully, the whole book, whole code, and having it recodified also. You know, I'll look into the cost of that, what it would cost. We can do it through the League of Minnesota Cities. Yeah. I mean, because really last time we looked at it was, I think it was 04, and then we passed it early 05, so, you know, it's been 12 years. A lot of things changed in that time, so.
Anybody else hearing anything or any comments on Brad Street or just on the street parking in general? And right now, when we did go through the ordinance, there is an ordinance on the books that if your car is there for 24 consecutive hours, we do have a course of action to take care of the car. If it really comes to an issue, maybe that's what we do is we just have the CSO mark tires and see if they move. If they don't move for 24 hours, you know, then we start letting the people know. It's kind of like when snow is flying.
In the wintertime, it's really bad.
Yeah, I mean, we let them know ahead of time, and I think we've even ticketed a couple of the same cars twice in one season, and they still won't move the vehicle. So I think what it comes down to next, if we do ticket them going forward, and especially during snow time, then maybe we look at putting teeth in the ordinance to say, okay, the third time they're calling Smith and he's coming to pick the vehicle up, and you're going to have to go into town to get it. Nothing's worse than after all the streets are plowed and then you see that barrier of snow around a car. You know, and it's nothing that the snowball can do. I mean, and we don't want them to damage the vehicle, but the same token, people need to be.
The street just gets narrower and narrower.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it costs us more money because then Greg's got to run there with a bobcat or something to clean the street up. Sure they can have us come in here.
Hence is why we issue tickets to recoup them costs for the extra cleanup that is incurred.
There's also been complaints of people parking the wrong direction on the roads. On Martha and
then
also on Park.
I believe if they get hit, then your insurance company would be able to then because they'll find out they won't have insurance. 50 will not come over
And on Martha.
I don't think that's an easy fix, but hopefully there's a cop in the area. You just call it in.
Yeah. Any other comments, questions, concerns?
Well, just while you're on ordinances, Chris, just maybe we'll touch base on that, what we looked at as we reviewed ordinances and kind of the general procedure we found and most cities have and requirements with state statute is basically either have a peace officer or designated duty person to deal with nuisances or fire complaints. So basically, once we'd get the complaint, we'd send out an initial letter stating they have so many days to fix this. If it isn't fixed within these days, it'll go back to the council where you'll be provided an opportunity for a hearing on why you didn't ratify or correct your nuisance. So then we would have to have a meeting, and then basically the city would have to allow them a chance to give their side. And then we could, well, the council then could, after they listen to their side, make a determination as to whether a nuisance is created, send out another letter or posting, giving them whatever amount we were looking at, what, up to 30 days. And if it isn't corrected at that time, and then we would just hand it over for prosecution. So there's hoops to jump. We can't just, unfortunately, we were hoping we could just write an ordinance and say, all right, you got so many days, first offense is this one, second is this, but when you got Minnesota state statutes governing it, and that's what our ordinance is referenced to. So.
Time lapse in between there, and you said, what were you talking about? When you write the letter, that's when the time would start, 30 days?
Well, 30 days from date of letter when the council would determine that it is a nuisance or a violation. So you're still looking at, gosh, it can be a, you know,
2 months.
Yeah, 2 month process.
The interesting thing that we uncovered though as we're going through and looking at the ordinance was that we can impose additional fine or basically tack on an additional misdemeanor charge to the nuisance for every day after day 30. So let's say the person exhausts their 30 days and then they take a week to get it done. Well, they're already going to get charged with the original because they didn't get it done in the 30 days. And they'll get 7 additional charges thrown on top of it. Each charge comes with a potential 90 days in jail and or a $1,000 fine. So that's, unfortunately, that's going to be our teeth that we have in these nuisance ordinances. Will everybody comply? I don't know. I hope we don't have to go and have a meeting. I mean, hopefully when we go through the ordinance process and we have the public hearing and we explain what the new ordinance is going to be and the punishment for it, if they're not in compliance, that will get some people off the schneid and say, okay, yeah, I really don't want to have to face 90 days in jail and or a $1,000 fine, you know, up to whatever it would be. And then of course the prosecution that we just, since we already contract with the county, we would just hand it over to the county, and then we're out of the picture.
Yeah, then they would deal with the issue. I believe they get 2/3 of the fine, and we'd get a third.
Yeah.
So that way we could recoup some of our costs that would be involved with it. The other thing we looked at is that we'd rewrite the penalty so that the penalty, along with the misdemeanor and the additional days, that would also include that we can recoup all costs for legal fees, administrative fees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that way we're not out any money.
And if they don't have any money, then we can put it on their tax.
Correct. Yep.
So that next meeting, plan to see the first draft of that ordinance, and then we'll hopefully, if all things go well, we'll...
As long as they don't pass that 10-day requirement.
Yeah.
Governor, I don't know, has he signed it yet? They did pass it.
I don't know if he's signed it yet or not.
So just to have a heads up, the House and Senate did pass that. So you have to give 10 days notice.
Although it wouldn't go into effect until July 1st.
So. All right, so we'd have time.
We have time. But anyway, just look for it in the next meeting here, and we'll go over it. And then hopefully, if everybody is incongruent with it and has no major changes to it, Hopefully we call for a public hearing up for our next meeting, and then we can go ahead and get it enacted and get it going. Emergency manager.
I was approached by Mr. Brad Draghi, and he is possibly looking to step down as emergency management director due to some other conflicts that he has and other priorities. So he had talked to me about it if I bring it forth to the council. I've talked to Justin, and we'd kind of just have Justin take his place if Brad's looking to step down. But I think the one thing I would like, if that's Brad's wishes, that he would do it in writing. So I think we should require it in writing so we have, you know, official documentation on that. I mean, personally, I was hoping he'd stay on, but I think he has other priorities and things going on this summer that he feels that if he steps down, then someone else can take over, for he may not be around as much this summer, so.
Let me bring this up then. Do we want the fire chief to be the emergency manager?
Doesn't necessarily have to be.
If something hits this town, I don't think he's going to have his hands full directing those 30 guys. He's going to have to go to this guy and say, I need light towers, I need equipment, I need chainsaws, I need whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to him with all of his resources to get it for him. And Justin's going to have his hands full out there directing his teams. This team's over here on William Street. This team's over on Market Street. This team's over going through houses over 950 from the railroad tracks east, you know. It's just my feeling. I'm just throwing it out there. I just think that's an awful big load for one guy to carry. If something really, God forbid it does, mm-hmm. it happens to something.
And I guess that's something we can put back for to Justin to bring up at the next fire department meeting.
I mean, if he'd have a fireman that would want to take on that job, that'd be great, because then, I mean, he's pretty much in. It should be somebody that has
experience.
I think that has connections with a lot of people.
Do you know how? And I know I just went through that training too that they put on Oklahoma or Minnesota's security, Homeland Security Group. And I'm trying to remember if there were different managers was other than the chief, but I can't recall one way or another. But I hear what you're saying in regards to.
Well, a lot, if you remember, even when we had the training here, they did talk about that, where kind of what reiterate what Scott said is you're going to have the chief's got this. And they said if it's bad enough, the chief may be taken away with the governor and, you know, or the state reps or FEMA or whatever. If it's to that point, got to show all that areas, then you need someone. You know, it makes sense to have two people when you think about it, but sometimes with a small town, you don't have them options. But if you have that option for someone else to step up and do it, I'd be all for having, you know, someone do emergency management and then having the chief, you know, for that chain of command.
Is there any special classes for emergency manager that you have to have? Any requirements?
I just think the same ISO stuff that we had to go through. And I don't believe this isn't additional, but maybe Jeremy can
just check. maybe the higher. I'm sure they have 1, 2, and 7. I don't know if they have to have 8. That'd be my only question, is if they would have to have 800.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll look into that and see. I mean, we don't have to make a decision who the next emergency manager is tonight anyway, at least until we get the official resignation of Brad.
It'd be nice to eat. If you talk to Jeremy, it'd be nice to say that.
Stay on for the
council's wishes would be if you could stay on just a couple more months just to help us out, and just in case.
Even if, I think it'd be nice if you could stay on for the season, the weather season.
Yeah. I know he's pursuing firefighting up in.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he's got his cabin and that, they've asked him that.
Yeah.
I said, well, congratulations, good for you. I mean,
that was the main reason he gave me
why. Spend more time.
Because he'll be up there and he'd hate to.
Yeah.
be up there, not be here, as you know.
That'd be nice. So if you could just stay on.
I'll talk to him.
Stay on the roll, and then we'd really appreciate that. You can even tell him I made that comment.
Well, he'll be able to listen to
it. Because he ain't going to believe it anyway.
That would mean something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think we should. I think we should maybe talk to Justin or have him talk to the fire department.
Yeah.
If there would be a guy, excuse me, on the fire department that would be willing to,
okay,
to help Justin out and just take that command so that Justin can focus strictly on the duty at hand.
Yeah, I was just looking through my notes from that Carver County Emergency Managers meeting that we had a few weeks back, and I don't see anything in my notes that I'm concerned with, like, who is an emergency manager? Like, does it have to be someone in the fire or police group, or can it be someone outside of the group? Or
I think the perfect manager is somebody who really has his fingers in everything, kind of a little bit, knows everybody, knows a little bit of everybody. So wherever we can get, you know, so wherever we can get from the right now, we're in the hardware store or whatever. Not that usually all the incidences that I've ever been to, that's usually not a problem. There's businesses coming, Menards and Home Depot and Lowe's and whatever, they're coming with truckloads and truckloads of shovels and rakes and brooms or whatever you need, you know.
Yeah. So it'd be good to have someone's wits about them that's directing all that traffic.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we find out and move forward after we get the resignation from Brad. Well, you timed that out pretty well.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Just one more thing before we go to Brad. On the workers' comp renewal.
Oh, yeah.
What's council's wishes versus premium option? With the regular premium, we're looking at $5,922. If we go to a $250 deductible, we get a $54 credit, $500 deductible, we get $102, et cetera, et cetera. Just don't know what council's thoughts are on there. Basically, the thing is if you don't have a claim, take the deductible, you come ahead. You have a claim, then... I mean, it's not a huge savings. You know, you're looking at 1 to,
yeah, I was gonna say it's
not, you know, 3%, really. You know, it's...
It's actually about $100, huh?
Yeah, 54 for 250, $102 for 500, but then say you have a claim, well, you're out $500 versus the 102 that you save. So it's all that. Are you going to have a claim or not? How many claims do you have a year? You know, how many years can you go without a claim that it pays for itself?
Yeah, I hope you never have a claim, but if you just have one, then it paid for itself.
Right.
Any thoughts on which direction we want to go? Jason?
What is it right now? Yeah.
It'd be the 5922. Yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that's not the difference. Okay. What we got.
We're looking for a motion for that then?
Sure. Yeah, regular premium option.
Second? Moved and seconded to go with the regular premium option for the standard premium of loss. All there?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. All right, now we can talk again.
Well, thanks for having me. Again, I'm Brad Falcisek with Abilac & Myers. You should have the two copies in front of you. One's the report with the blue cover and one's the management letter. I'll go through the management letter because it's summary. They're kind of at the same. So certainly we can always open up the financials if we need to get to the question. The management letter just gives a high-level summary that's in there. First page of that management letter gives our responsibility, or outlines our responsibility as auditors informing the audit, and that is to give an opinion on the financial statements. which are the responsibility of management of the city. So we're just giving an opinion on them. So we're issuing an unmodified or clean opinion on them. So we're saying everything that's in here we feel is materially stated correctly and supportive of the disclosures, the proper disclosures. So part of arriving at that opinion, we'll look at your internal controls and just give them the number of staff that's in the office and process and transactions. We do report a couple internal control findings, nothing unusual for cities of your size, so nothing to be alarmed at, but there are some things that we do need to report as part of the process. So the first one's on page 2, preparation of financial statements. Again, the financial statements are city's responsibility to prepare. We do prepare them, along with many of our other cities that we prepare the financial statements for, as part of our audit process, but this finding really is just the person that we're getting information from to prepare the financial statements, the same person that's reviewing them. So anything that's in the financial statements, there might be something that's missing from the financial statements that we just don't know about that wasn't told to us. So again, just want to make sure that it just clarifies who is responsible. So we feel everything that we've been told is in here and accurately reflected. At the same time, we don't feel anything from the past either. Page 3, the other findings, so just related to segregation of duties. Again, a lot of these bullets here are just a reminder of your responsibility that you're looking at financial information on a monthly basis and asking good questions, getting good answers, because ultimately the finances are council's responsibility to start. And so if you see something that looks unusual or maybe you're expecting a deposit you're not seeing come through, you're asking questions online and getting good answers. So it's just a reminder of your responsibility as council members and to look through the financial information. Top of page 4, state auditor requires us to go through 7 different checklists related to state statutes that they ask that or require us to test as part of the audit of the financial statement process, audit of the financial statement. So we did look at those and didn't find any compliance related issues related to different things you can invest in or how you deposit your money or how you're contracting or bidding, those types of things. So following state statutes there, so that's good. Middle of that page, we do go through some 3 bullets that describe some of the higher numbers in your financials that are estimates. A couple of those are depreciation, and that first bullet, and then the other really big one is the pension liability. This year, we'll get into it too much unless you want to, but we're reporting $160,000 liability on your books related to the city's proportionate share to the unfunded pension liability of the state's pension plan, or parent's pension plan. So, you required as new standards adopted last year, you're required to put, since you're a member of that pension plan, you contribute to it, you're required to put a proportionate share of what you contribute to it on your books. So there's like a $5 billion, so I think, in that plan, so your proportionate share is 0.00 something. So you have your net amount to $160,000, just under. So, again, that's not something you ever have to fund or try to budget for and set money aside for, but it's just a liability. Take a page 6. Top of that is just some policies and procedures. We always like to see policies and procedures on file, so just continue to work on establishing those and getting those adopted. But at the bottom of that page, you start getting into the financial results. So we talked about that first paragraph in the general fund that you do have a policy to keep your fund balance at a minimum between 35 and 50% of your following year's expenditures in your general fund. So on page 7, we take a look at where you're sitting in that realm. So at the end of 2016, your fund balance as a percentage of next year's budget was just about 66%, that blue line. That's where your fund balance is. You can see it increased about $100,000 from the previous year. So your next year budget's $581,000. So compare those two. So you get about a 66% reserve. And that 35-50%, those of you that weren't around when that was established, that's really there to establish you want to have enough reserves to get you to the next tax settlement, because the majority of your revenue that supports your general fund comes in your tax property taxes, which you receive those in June or May, June, and then again in December. So you see about halfway through the year. So you want to have enough to get you to that next major revenue source. So that's where that percentage comes. And there's some other revenues that are coming in, so it gives a range of that 35 to 50. But you're at that 65%, which is kind of where you were back in 2013. Bottom of page 7, we take a look at your total budget amounts compared to your actual amounts for the year. Let's see, your revenues came in about $31,000, $32,000 over what you budgeted. Expenditures were $47,000 under what you budgeted. Which allowed you to, we did make the transfer out of 72 and then transfer, or 67, transfer in of 73 about. So we increased fund balance about $100,000 over the previous year. So ended at 33,605. I have some bullets there, kind of the bigger numbers that had variances in revenues, unbudgeted collections for insurance refunds. So League Minnesota City's refunds insurance premiums based on claims and stuff for the year, so it's really not something you can budget for or have really a good idea. This year was a good idea for most cities as far as getting those reimbursements back. So you had about a $14,000 reimbursement there. And then expenditure variances, Public Works Department was the biggest variance there, with the capital outlay, so about $45,000 less.
And just to touch on that quick, Brad, for council, yeah. That was basically due to the streets project coming in under bid.
Page 8, still looking at your general fund. So here to think your revenue sources. So these are the revenues that support your general fund. So you can see the property taxes, the top line there, $429,000 for 2016. About 63% of your revenues come from property taxes. So, which, again, is the majority of your revenues. You have transfers in at $72,000 this year, which made up 10% of your revenues this year. You can see the chart below the line chart again, just there to outline that the majority of the revenues come with taxes. Page 9, same type of thing for your expenditures. 2014 to 16, current expenditures from those 3 years, $364,000 increase to $389,000, so about a 7% increase in your current expenditures. Capital always is going to change from year to year, but current expenditures increased about 7% over those 3 years. We do have the last two columns there where we're comparing your city to other cities of the same population. So other cities of populations under 2,500 in population size. So take a look at what you're spending per resident compared to others per resident. So current expenditures, 789 compared to your peers at 643. So there's a lot of varying size cities in there that can be spread, and you'd be on the lower end of population size within these categories. So there's some fixed costs that, as cities get bigger with more population, there's probably not a lot more expense related to things, but there's more can be distributed amongst on a per capita basis. So common scaling is what we call it. Page 10, capital project funds. So these are any funds you have in projects outstanding or maybe setting money aside for different equipment purchases. But we have a capital purchases fund. Minimal activity in both these funds, actually. So that changed about $1,500 or $1,600 in fund balance. The fire equipment fund had a transfer in about $20,000. So that's just setting money aside, building that from $80,000 to $110,000 a year. And really no specific purchases in either one of these categories for any of these funds this year. Debt service funds, we have one debt service fund outstanding. This is related to the 2007 Geo Improvement Bond. So outstanding a year in this, stand at the end of 2016, have $100,000 outstanding. We have the chart there that takes you out to the end of the life. So spending just over between $15,000 and $20,000 to the end of 2023 to pay this bond off for principal and interest over the next 7 years. So here, we just want to make sure you're setting money, you're putting money aside in here to have enough cash to the baby sensors department's going to off each year. So you are have some levies that are going into this fund to support the business payments. And then last funds we talk about, the enterprise funds. So these are funds that should be self-supporting with charges for services for the most part. So here we take a look at just on a cash basis, cash flow requirements for your operating activities, your operating receipts, operating disbursements. We do add the debt service requirements in here. So the bars on the right each year, we have the gray and the green. So the gray is your operating costs or disbursements, and then we add to the debt service, we add the debt service requirements onto that, because we want to make sure that your operating receipts are meeting both these requirements. You want to make sure they're getting, collecting enough to pay your operating expenses plus your debt service requirements. So you want to make sure you have enough to pay your debt. So you can see all the way up until, or starting in 2015, your operating service receipts are meeting your disbursements, your debt. And then you can see down below your cash at the same point has been stayed pretty consistent. So that's going to, that doesn't always match the top chart just because there's maybe some capital purchases or something that's not reflected in the top chart. That even though the last 2 years you've had increases in this fund, there's maybe some transfers out or some capital purchases that are reflected in that top chart where we're just looking at the operating expenses. But over, we do have the red line there, which is a year of debt service plus 10% of operating costs. So that's a minimum target. So anything above it. So that number would be there to meet your operating expenses. So anything above that would be for capital potentially. So just because you're over that doesn't mean you're at excess of the funding. That's kind of what I'm trying to say there. Same with the sewer fund on the next page 13. Let's see, in 2013, and then now again in 2016, your operating receipts have met your disbursements plus your debt. Then you can see your cash on this fund as well. Even though some of those numbers up above, or those bars up above, have significant differences, down below your cash has stayed pretty consistent. So you've been maintaining your cash, or actually building it the last 3 years for reserves. Bonds outstanding in your sewer fund, about $200,000, just under $200,000 that you're in. Water fund, you have about $560,000 of bonds outstanding. So you definitely want to make sure you have reserves in place to pay those off. Then your stormwater fund, primarily your stormwater fund, you can see in the chart on the top there, the majority are almost 100% of your expenses out of here just support your bond. So, with that green bar there, but you've been doing that. So, your cash in 2013 was just over 100,000 in 16. So you've been maintaining that cash balance, each of these years. So you have been collecting receipts enough to pay your disbursements on these bonds. So $900,000 of bonds outstanding, in this fund. So you want to continue to monitor your rates and you're continuing to negotiate. Collect enough to support that bond. The last page 15, we take a look at your city again compared to that, other cities of similar population. Again, you're on the lower end of that, so some of these may be skewed a little bit, but it's kind of nice to see where your peers are as well. But debt to assets, so here we're taking a look at total assets outstanding, total liabilities outstanding divided by the total assets. So kind of shows all the assets you own, how much of those have debt against them? So that 40% debt against them. Which then your peers at 41%. But what you want to take a look at in some of these is just kind of a trend in your city. So are you going in a positive direction or a negative or not positive direction? So in 2013 you're at 48%. So you've definitely been trending in the right direction by paying the bonds off primarily. Debt service coverage. So here we're taking a look at just your enterprise funds, your water sewer, storm funds, how your operating, net operating revenue, is it enough to support your debt service requirement? So you're, we'll make sure that's at least 100%, so you're at 109%, so positive there. debt per capita. Again, here we're just taking a look at bonded debt outstanding divided by the number of residents. You're at 3554. Again, looking at the trend in your city, you're at 4210 back in 2015. Slightly over what your peers are in this category, but again, you're at the lower end of the population size. Taxes per capita, 894 compared to 469. That's fluctuating. These are just collections, so some years you may have higher number of delinquent collections, which would skew this higher, just because it's only based on the collections, not necessarily the tax levy. So if your tax levy maybe stayed the same, these numbers wouldn't necessarily stay the same each year or so. But again, economies of scale, lower the population size, you still need taxes to support a lot of similar services that are fixed in those population sizes. So you're at 894. Current expenditures per capita, this is taking a look at what you're spending per resident on your current activity. So taking out any capital related items that you're purchasing or debt service requirements. So you're at 789 compared to your peers at the 810. So on your current expenditure category, less than your peers. So the capital, so this is just going to be based on whatever projects you have going on, outside of water and sewer debt projects. So you're spending 272 this year compared to 41 the previous year, 2015. So the last two ratio or percentages there actually kind of gives an indication of how old your assets are, and infrastructure makes up majority of these assets. So typically it's infrastructure assets that are driving these categories. So it kind of tells based on their accounting life. So if you built a new street and it was 10 years and we put it on and we think it's going to last 20 years, let's say, we'll depreciate over 20 years and we're 10 years into that, this percentage would be 50%. So you're about 75% of the way through, on average, your governmental type assets. So these would be streets or any buildings that aren't associated with water, sewer, storm. Then your water, sewer, storm, you're at 51%. So about halfway through, on average, the lives of your water line and those types of things. So definitely lower in that government or the street thing.
You're basically telling us we should start budgeting for repairs.
Yeah. You have more repairs. Then the rest of the answer letter is just some new standards that are going to be coming out. Nothing in these standards are going to be adding liabilities to statements like the one that was added last year, but these are some note disclosures that will be implemented in your report. Nothing too significant that's going to affect how you budget or do anything.
Benefit plans mean.
That's really it. So I'll take any questions if you have any.
General observation from somebody that doesn't know anything about it. Why is our cash balance so much higher than the minimum balance on the sewer fund? Is that normal? Is that something that you see?
So the sewer fund. You're spending about $40,000 a year. There may be some projects. I know if there was a sewer line break or something, those are expensive fixes. So any of these enterprise funds, anything that could happen in these funds are expensive fixes. So that is just a reserve there that you maybe would have to bond for or
so
take out a temporary
loan.
Still
a healthy fund, basically.
Yeah, and the main reason that is we're basically nearing the life of our ponds.
Gotcha.
And that'll be, we're talking millions. So we just have a small portion there to cover future expenses.
Gotcha. Yeah,
and the sewer fund's always been healthy.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're overcharging because your cash balance has been staying pretty consistent. It's not like it's growing hundreds of thousands of dollars each year either. So. It's staying fairly steady. It's growing a little bit, but as you pay for it,
In the few years there where you see a dip, and that's where we actually lowered the sewer rates to help offset some of the increased water rates and the stormwater charge.
Any others?
Council, any other questions on the audit?
Just looks like we need to take heed on some of those low percentages. See that stuff where everybody else is mid-50s and we're getting down to mid-20s.
What?
If that's a pretty good indicator.
Yeah, again, it's just, it is an indicator, can be an indicator of more additional repairs. Talking to some others, engineers and stuff, different soil types too, sometimes assets last longer in some cities than others too. So even if you're at a lower rate, you may not have, depending on, there's a lot of variables that go into how long they last.
You know, and a prime example to look at that is, that's why I kind of brought up, you know, you're telling us it could be repairs. Well, look what we've put into the hall here lately. I mean, the building's 80 years old. You know, so it's fully depreciated three times over, you know. So when you have older buildings, but if they're in good shape, sometimes that won't be a tell-all indicator, you know, if you maintain your building. It's just that the concept of depreciation where you know, you know, your house you depreciate 20 years, but you hope to have it 100, right?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
The building's probably on the books. Maybe, let's say the $200,000 for this building. Probably on the books for a zero, maybe even a zero value at this point. So it'd be this percentage for the building itself would be zero, which offsets some of those, maybe some newer assets. So it's an average.
Okay. If you look at that, like with the streets, actually our streets aren't in that bad of shape. I built them in 1988, and they were set up for 20 years. Yeah. And what are we going on now?
It's sort of
like, that's my place there, and that hasn't been touched. Yeah, they need, there's a couple of them that need a little bit of work. But otherwise, other than that, as a whole, if you drive through the city, the streets are all in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Okay. And like Brad said, that comes down to soils, base, you know, right. those factors too, maintenance.
Right.
Quality when they're put in.
Well, the good thing about that, in about 3 years, that percentage is going to go way up once we get our new water tower. So,
yeah, right.
Big number.
So if you're worried about a stamp, we got a fix for that.
Don't worry.
Any other questions? Comments? Concerns? Well, looks like you got off easy.
Perfect.
Right. Super. Thank you very much. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Oh, thanks for Jeremy for all the work in our house. They helped us put this in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoy it.
We'll move on then to City Council reports. Jason? Anything? Tim?
I do have one thing, I guess. I ran into the fire chief and I asked him about hockey rink stuff or the ice rink stuff and just kind of how he thought that went and things like that. And I think he thought that that went well or as good as it could go. He said the biggest thing was, they got their butts kicked pretty bad when it went down. He said they would lose everything. And he mentioned a liner. He thought would have saved them a ton of just time and effort all together, just because they could have, even if it were melted, they would have kept it. So nothing that has to make, but I mean, just to throw it out there. I think he said he even looked into it himself, 400-ish, he thought, approximately for the size that he needed. So just throwing it out there, just for you guys to kind of think of, maybe we'll talk about it in another meeting, but if you feel it's worth it, if you felt like it had enough.
When it gets to about 100, we should talk about it again.
What's that?
When it gets to about 100 degrees, we'll talk about it again.
Anyway, that's all I had, just kind of throwing that out there.
No, I mean, I have a couple of buddies that have backyard rinks, and they do the same thing. They have this plastic liner that they just put in the bottom of it, smooth it out with soil, and then they fill it. So when you get those days where you do get the 35, 40 degree weather and you start losing your base, it stays in there. It doesn't go out to the grass.
Yeah, not starting from scratch.
Yeah.
And then you get a thaw.
You can't keep up. Especially last year, it was a bad winter to start that.
Yeah.
It just, so it's hard to judge, how well it did because it was such a bad winter.
Yeah, it was pretty tough.
No, I definitely think it's something we look forward to in the fall.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Councilman Steve.
In the last months ago, there was a battery on there, and I asked about it, but I just can't believe that a battery is going to cost $800. And no one knew something about it. I think I can do better.
Well, do you know which claim it was?
Yes, I was trying to look real quick before the meeting started, and I needed a little more time. I think it was a reimbursement to pets for him. He might have picked that up and needed reimbursement.
Well, we'll take a look. Take a look.
Yeah. I just see what it is because I can learn by my battery place. I think that battery, whatever it is, could have been bought a lot cheaper than that.
Was it for the fire department, I assume, then?
Yeah.
Congressman Scott?
No, sir.
Nothing you have, huh?
No.
Okay. So, since the only thing I have is that I did attend that Carver County Emergency Management meeting that was put on by our Minnesota Homeland Security, Joe Kelly. So actually it was pretty interesting. It was a lot different than what we ran through that one night, and it was more geared towards us as elected officials, and also it was geared towards, city officials and the fire department, the police, and that, like, really where our roles will collide, separate, divide, and that. Talked a lot about chain of command. To your point, Scott, you mentioned earlier about the emergency manager, maybe somebody different than the fire department, just because the chief, just you're going to have different things that are going on, and they talked through real life scenarios, although they did kind of keep the identity of some of the cities and some of the key figures out of the way, although if you listen to it close enough, you can kind of figure out which disaster they were talking about, so they talked a lot about that. They're going to be setting up another one, on another topic associated with this. This series of trainings, I believe there are three or four, like, just similar meetings like this, that they have to offer, and each one's just a little bit different of a piece of the puzzle, in that. So it was good information. I mean, I learned quite a bit, from it, and just, what not only my role would be, but what everybody in this room right now's role would be, going forward. And, hopefully we never have to use the information, but it was definitely good information to have. And so I encourage next time when this comes up that everybody try to attend one of the two sessions. And that, I believe they're going to shoot for August time frame or September time frame. So we'll see if it comes through or not. But yeah, it was good information. Yeah, so. And I've been trying to figure out how I can share my notes with Jeremy I can send it to him and so you can share with you guys too. But for some reason, my memo pad on my tablet does not translate into a file it's a readable file. I've been trying to monkey and trying to get into Word. I might just have to copy paste over. So.
Yeah, if you do that, then send it to me, and I can forward it.
Yeah,
I can't get that online. It's always too large. They won't on my phone.
Can you shrink it?
No, I mean the message is too large. It says.
Oh. Okay.
Oh. The file size is too big.
He's got some large pigeons too. Well, I don't have anything else. I look for a motion to adjourn.
So good.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn the city council meeting at 8:01. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.